about throughout the morning. Check it out at our website. Great information there from our news team at KAXE.org.
Support comes from Hot Spring Hot Tub of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Information available at hotspringhottubmn.com.
Thanks also goes out to Lake Country Power. They're a Touchstone Energy Cooperative committed to community, giving back through scholarships, youth programs, Operation Roundup, and more. Lake Country Power, made by the community for the community.
And support for KXE comes from Woodworks Homes, building handcrafted new homes and providing remodeling services in northern Minnesota. Learn more at woodworksmn.com.
Chelsea, stick around. We'll get more information from you. But coming up, news headlines. You're listening to 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and the land and the elections of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events with translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. It's 8:01.
Corva Coleman, Donald Trump is now president-elect of the United States. The Associated Press made the call for him before dawn this morning. Trump won key swing states, including North Carolina and Wisconsin. NPR's Lexi Schapitl reports another key swing state Trump won is Pennsylvania.
With 19 electoral votes, Pennsylvania was the biggest prize of the blue wall states, and Trump's win there all but clinched his return to the White House. Both candidates saw the Keystone State as critical to their success, each visiting Pennsylvania more than a dozen times. Ad spending in Pennsylvania totaled more than $500 million. The Trump campaign focused its efforts on boosting turnout in the rural and Rust Belt areas of the state, while also making a pitch for Latino voters. The strategy earned him a larger margin of victory than he saw in 2016. Lexi Schapitl, NPR News.
Turnout was heavy in many states. NPR's Domenico Montanaro says voters had top issues on their minds as they cast their ballots.
Voters said that the state of democracy was their biggest issue overall. About 35% said that. But the economy was not far behind that. And 8 in 10 Republicans said so. 8 in 10 Democrats said the state of democracy was their top issue. Abortion rights came in third at 14%. And again, almost 8 in 10 Democrats said that abortion rights was their top issue.
NPR's Domenico Montanaro reporting. Voters in 10 states faced questions about abortion on their ballots. Voters in Florida, Nebraska, and South Dakota have chosen to keep their bans or limits on the procedure. Voters in Arizona, Colorado, Maryland, Missouri, Nevada, New York, and Montana have voted to protect abortion rights, including some of them in their state constitutions. Republicans have flipped control of the U.S. Senate and will hold at least 52 seats in the chamber next year. They've won at least two seats from the Democrats, one in Ohio, another in Montana. They seized an open Senate seat in West Virginia. There are other Senate races still outstanding, including in Arizona. NPR's Ben Giles reports from Phoenix.
Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego maintained a lead over Republican Carrie Lake throughout the night. Lake, a MAGA firebrand who's modeled her political image after Donald Trump, is underperforming in Arizona compared to the former president. Democrats have won three consecutive races for Senate in the past 6 years, including a special election to replace the late Senator John McCain in 2020. This year's winner will replace outgoing Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who declined to run for re-election after she defected from the Democratic Party in 2022 and declared herself an independent. Ben Giles, NPR News, Phoenix.
Two incoming Democratic senators will become the first black women to represent their states, Delaware's Lisa Blunt Rochester and Maryland's Angela Also Brooks. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Donald Trump is receiving congratulatory messages from around the world, including from officials who once voiced dissent with Trump. NPR's Lauren Freyer reports from London.
In a statement, UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer congratulated Trump on what the British leader called a historic election victory and says he looks forward to working with Trump. Last month, the Trump campaign filed a legal complaint against Starmer's center-left Labour Party, accusing it of breaking U.S. law by sending staff to campaign for Democratic candidate Kamala Harris. Starmer's politics are more closely aligned with Vice President Harris's, but he had a two-hour dinner with Trump Trump in New York this fall and pledged then to work with whomever wins the White House. His Foreign Secretary David Lammy, who in 2017 called Trump a racist and Nazi sympathizer, has also now sent congratulations to him. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, London.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu congratulated Trump, saying his victory, quote, is history's greatest comeback. This comes as Netanyahu fired his defense minister, Yoav Gallant. Netanyahu says significant differences had emerged between the two of them about how to proceed with war in Gaza. There were huge protests last night in two Israeli cities over Gallant's dismissal. The National Hurricane Center says Hurricane Rafael is now a Category 2 storm approaching Cuba. Its top sustained winds are at 100 miles per hour. It's expected to become a major hurricane before making landfall in Cuba. It's expected to lose strength and may pour heavy rain this week on the southeastern U.S. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
...806, and you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton.
And I'm Andrew DeZingle.
Chelsea Perkins in the studio with us as well. We just got a text come in, and we thank them for that. That's keeping us going. You can text us anytime at 218-326-1234. It says, thank you so much for posting results on your website. Traditionally, I struggle to locate local election results, but you have made it super easy. Super's in all caps, Chelsea. And accessible, which I very much appreciate. And then we got a nice little smiley face as well. So we're needing a little of that today. Thank you. Know that there's a lot of great information that you can get at kexe.org. You're not going to get that information all in one place. We're really honing in on what happened in for Northern Minnesota on yesterday's elections.
It's true.
Yeah.
And we receive support from the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program of first call for help to 211 and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to residents of any age who are in crisis. They are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211. And program is supported by Grand Dental Center, where doctors Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com.
If you want to get your mind off elections, today at noon at the Northland Arboretum in Brainerd, it's Feed Your Mind, and you learn how to landscape with birds in mind. You can bring your own lunch to this event. And Minnesota has Give to the Max Day this Thursday, it's coming up November 21st. You can schedule donations for your favorite causes, including KAXE, right now. And when you donate through GiveMN, we are eligible to win extra money from the prize pool. Visit givemn.org to make your donations.
And weather today, partly sunny with highs 46 to 49 degrees, west winds 5 miles per hour. It looks like the sun is starting to shine right now.
And I think shine is a little optimistic there. I don't see a shine. I see a little light. How's that? That's good.
I see the light.
All right, good.
Cloudy tonight with lows 28 to 32 degrees. And then tomorrow, partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 40s, breezy west winds 5 to 25 miles per hour.
Coming up, we're going to be chatting with Aaron Brown. He'll talk about some of the races he was watching in the elections of 2024. Stay tuned, and thanks for joining us on the Wednesday Morning Show.
donne la main, on se promène.
Amadou and Miriam, it is 8:12. There we go, watching the clock like that. New music from them on the Wednesday morning show. I'm Heidi Holton with Andrew Duzingle and Chelsea Perkins. Just a moment, we'll be joined by Aaron Brown.
We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering community exhibits, workshops, and many upcoming events. Announcing new classes beginning in November, offering a Scandinavian Snowflakes workshop on November 14th, a needle felting workshop on December 7th, and a two-day acrylic landscape workshop on January 24th and 25th. All are welcome to attend. More at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
We are expecting partly sunny skies today with highs 46 to 49, west winds around 5, cloudy tonight with lows 28 to 32, and partly sunny tomorrow, Thursday, highs in the mid to upper 40s. Aaron Brown joins us now. Looks like he is in his office at Hibbing Community College, where he's an instructor. He's also a columnist with the Minnesota Star Tribune and Minnesota Brown and work. I can't wait for your book to come out, Aaron Brown.
Me too.
Welcome. Thanks for being here the day after the election.
Thank you, Heidi. Hi, Chelsea. Hi, Andrew. It's good to be here. It is nice to be on one of the better news operations in northern Minnesota in covering these election results. And I appreciate the work you all have done.
Oh, thanks, thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome.
Aaron, we'll let you kind of take it. Where do you want to start with taking a look at what happened?
Well, I mean, I've been listening to you this morning, so I know you've reported some of these results, but I think what I'm preparing to write about is the results from some of these state house races on the range. There were two and a half districts that I was watching pretty closely as far as the range side of things. And of course, the big one, 7B, where retiring legislator Dave Lislegard was retiring. You had a race between Republican Cal Warwis and DFLer Lori Janet. And this was one that, you know, if you had watched the recent elections and saw how statewide races were going there, it was trending much more Republican. So it was kind of believed that Warwis would have an advantage. And I think there was hope because Janetopoulos ran a very well-funded and very aggressive campaign that maybe there was a chance of it staying close. It really wasn't close at all. It was about a 13-point win for Warwis. And that's actually not shocking if you look at the district's fundamentals, but that answers the question. That's now a fairly safe Republican seat. And the other race that was very close 2 years ago, District 3A, where Representative Roger Scraba of Ely was facing re-election, a challenge from Harley Droba and a third-party candidate. And this was one that was separated just by a handful of votes 2 years ago, but it wasn't close this time. Scraba really built on his lead. I think it was 8 or 9 points in the end. And so that represented a big gain for Scraba. And that becomes another district that DFLers might have a chance in. There's parts of that district, like the North Shore, Cook County in particular, that are have become more DFL over the years. But if you look at the rest of it, the very far eastern Iron Range, the Vermilion Range, Ely, and then, of course, Couchiching County, that's a big, big district, and it's got a very distinct Republican lean now. And then, of course, 3B, incumbent Republican Natalie Zelenskar of Hermantown, or rural Duluth, I guess, was facing Mark Munger, retired Judge D.F. Feller. And that was another one that was very close 2 years ago, and it was very close again. But again, Zelenskar appears to have won the race by a couple hundred votes. And so I said going in that if the Republicans swept those three seats, which was a possibility going in, of course, that it would mean that the state House majority for DFLers would be in some real danger. And as we see, we've got a really actually unusual circumstance brewing here where we might have a 67-67 tie in the House. And that opens up all kinds of... So if the Republicans had just straight up taken the state House, which was a possibility, we have a pattern for that. There's a Republican speaker who then negotiates with, in this case, a DFL Senate majority leader and a DFL governor. Well, now to get any bill out of the state House of Representatives at all requires somebody somewhere to vote not with their party, so to speak. And so you need 68 votes to pass a bill, and there's 67 votes in each caucus. So that becomes a really unique challenge. It has happened before in the 1970s, and actually Northern Minnesota trivia time. Irv Anderson, state representative from International Falls, was the speaker when that happened. I believe it was just before the end of the nonpartisan legislature. That's how long ago it was. And Irv was the head of the liberal caucus. What he did, and kind of famously, was he made an arrangement where he would be the speaker, and they would allow conservative caucus people to be the chairs of committees. And the result of that, however, was something that ended up favoring the liberal caucus. And that was kind of seen as a big coup on Irv Anderson's part back in the day. But we're in very different times now. And I don't think an arrangement like that's going to be as easy as it, well, it wasn't easy then. In fact, it was kind of a mess, but it led to a swing back to the liberal caucus, and then eventually the DFL when the partisan elections were restored there. It's really messy. So you got to negotiate with essentially the House will be the epicenter of negotiations just to get any bill out. And that could lead to some real issues. We just don't have a pattern for that. We don't know exactly how that'll go. And of course, the Republicans who have been in the minority for 2 years and very grumpy about it because they were kind of frozen out of all of the negotiations. Well, they're going to want to press every advantage they can get out of this situation because that's just their prerogative to do so. And so it could be very interesting. Essentially, even a tie would probably go to the Republican caucus just because they'll hold all 67 votes against any negotiated DFL bill. So it becomes essentially a de facto Republican House, even in a tie, I think, under the circumstances. But again, there's still some races to call there and still some uncertainty, but it'll be very interesting.
Aaron, I wanted to ask you, going back to the House District 3A race, that was one that I was certainly interested in, particularly with that third candidate involved. But, you know, Scraba, I believe he was a Democrat at one point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's run for that seat as a Democrat, an independent, and now as a Republican. And Scraba is probably among the Republicans now, the now Republican majority on the range. He's an interesting political character, let's say, just because he is kind of iconoclastic. He goes his own way. He's fairly, in many ways, a typical Republican vote in the House, but he's also, he's worked with Democrats on some things. He's probably been a very traditional Iron Range lawmaker on the IRRB, in many ways is a little different. That probably helped him in this particular district. Because he wasn't seen as an ideologue as much as perhaps someone like Cal Warwis, who is a very ideological Christian conservative Republican more like Representative, say, Ben Davis of the district over on the Grand Rapids side.
Six, I don't have
the number. The eight, yes, thank
six,
you.
Six, eight, yep.
Yeah. So that's yeah, there you go. So I don't have all the numbers in my head after the last redistricting. I still think of the old one. But so he's more in the model. Cal Warwis is more in the model of a Ben Davis, whereas Scraba is a little more, like I said, a little more unpredictable. And so there is, you know, that's the important thing to remember. Just like when the DFL ran the range and all those DFL reps, they had their rivalries and differences and slightly different points of view. And with a Republican majority now, you do see some differences among the Republican lawmakers. But for now, the only elected DFLer in the range delegation is Grant Hauschild, the state senator from District 3. And he's in a, I don't want to dare talk about the next election, but he'll be in a very tough race. He was in a tough race to begin with, but it'll be a very competitive race in a little under 2 years now.
Where do we go from here? Were you also?
I didn't mean to talk about 2026, but I did. Sorry.
Yeah, we can't take it to just the day after.
Yeah.
Some of the other, were you watching anything else? Some of the local stuff going on the range too.
I mean, I was paying attention to some of the school board races. I think if you know, in local school boards, this is not just locally here in northern Minnesota, but it's happening really all over the country. You're starting to see more ideology, partisan ideology, creep into local elections, especially school board races, which have been flashpoints for a lot of cultural debate over the last few years. And so if you were a person looking to reject ideologically conservative school board members from getting on the school board, or if you were a person advancing those causes, you got a little bit of a mixed bag in a lot of the local elections I've seen. In Grand Rapids, for instance, two of the education endorsed candidates got on, but their third one didn't, and a slightly more conservative person got on. But in the end, a lot of the races, like in Hibbing, the incumbents were generally successful. You know, so it was, you know, like I said, a mixed bag of results across the region and in some of those local races. It's you know, I've been working on kind of trying to figure this out. But local races are becoming more identified with general partisan politics now. A candidate can run for a school board seat or a city council seat, but when they go out door knocking, they will be asked repeatedly, what party do you belong to? And you can try to say, well, it's a nonpartisan race, but fundamentally, and that's true, but fundamentally voters don't want to accept that anymore. They want to know, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? And they're likely to base a lot of their decision on that. And so makes it very difficult in a lot of communities where there is a strong partisan lean, as a lot of these northern Minnesota communities have. If you happen to be a Democrat in a strongly Republican area, and Republicans experienced this to a degree you know, years ago, it becomes difficult to just say, hey, listen, I just care about the schools. I just care about the local city council. I just want a good community. If you're being judged on a partisan lens for that, it gets very difficult to operate. And it also means that when you have a party rule, I mean, history has got a lot of guides on this. You know, think about the old machine politics days where, say, the Democratic Party ran New York or the Republican Party ran Buffalo. Events like that in our history where top to bottom, all the slates on the local elections were held by party operatives who did what they were told. And then in many cases weren't as qualified as perhaps other people would have been. You know, you've got a lot of challenges that can come out of that. We're seeing some of that. A lot of local officials who are detached from the realities of running a school or running a city or running a county. And I think, you know, a plea for nonpartisanship, though today that falls very much on deaf ears, is something that we should be making, because we want our communities in matters that are not partisan to be representative of everybody, not just one of the parties.
We're going to be talking in about an hour with Shannon Watson from Majority in the Middle, and that's the work that she does in the state.
Yeah, I know Shannon.
Yeah, so we'll be kind of learning a little bit more and hearing about. She's got great ideas about how to kind of move away from the partisanship. The election's over, and what do we do now? How do we govern?
Right, exactly.
Aaron, okay, so you are from Balsam Township. How are the polls? And I believe you have at least one voter in your house, one of your children.
I do, right? Yes. Our son Henry was voted in his first election. He voted absentee from Wisconsin. We wondered whether he would want to vote in Wisconsin or Minnesota, Wisconsin being a swing state, and he ultimately wanted to vote in his home precinct. And yeah, so he had that experience, sent his ballot in a while ago. And then my wife and I voted in person at the Balsam Township Hall, and it was a very orderly, well-run local election, like just about every precinct I've heard about. I actually had the experience of a lot of polling places because I had to bring my mom to her polling place. I brought my sister to her polling place and helped them in both cases. So I was in Hibbing for a couple different polling places, all very well run. And of course, it's perhaps trite to say again, but our local election judges and officials really do a great job across the state. Red areas, blue areas, doesn't matter. It's run the same and very orderly. And you know, we all wish the results would come in quicker, but there are reasons why they don't. And they all have to do with security and accuracy. And anyway, well done to those who conducted our elections yesterday.
Yeah, big thank you to it's a bit of a thankless job, and they are there. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Well, Aaron, you'll be writing about this and following up.
Yeah, yeah. Well. You know, the thing about being a columnist is it just keeps coming. You know, you keep shoveling it in the furnace, and you wonder how it's going to go. And today we've got a lot of things to shovel, so that's business. Business is good.
That's Aaron Brown. You can read and see more at minnesotabrown.com. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you all.
Thanks. This is the Wednesday Morning Show. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We're going to be having more conversations, correct, Chelsea, coming up?
We sure are, yes. And, you know, I just wanted to expound a little bit on the election judge thing. Our team spent a lot of time at polling locations yesterday, and that is one of the most joyful parts of the experience, is engaging in conversation with these election judges, hearing about their dedication. And you really meet some people who've spent so much time. Megan ran into a woman in Beauvais who had been doing that for 42 years. 42 years she'd been dedicating time to serve as an election judge. And I've met people who've been doing it even longer. And it's just really, fills you with hope. That there are people who are just willing to spend their time doing that just to make sure that our democracy runs smoothly.
Yes, thank you. Our thanks really go out to you. Coming up later today, Andrew and Jennifer are going to be bringing us music on the river. We'll continue to keep you updated on local elections throughout the Wednesday Morning Show, an extended version of the morning show between 9 and 10 o'clock.
We receive support from Sanford Bemidji Joe Lucan Cancer Center, providing health and healing in a local setting. More at sanfordhealth.org. And we receive support from Benders, offering name brand shoes, clothing, and gifts with locations in Grand Rapids, Hibbing, and Duluth. BendersShoes.com. Our family serving yours.
A lot of things going on in our region, and that includes this Thursday night. The Mesabi Community Band is presenting A Salute to Veterans, Thursday, November 7th at 7 p.m. It's at the Eveleth Auditorium.
And looking at weather today, it's going to be partly sunny with highs 46 to 49 degrees. I don't know. It kind of looks like the sun is shining to me now.
Yes, you are right. There is sun.
With west wind 5 miles per hour, cloudy tonight with lows 28 to 32 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 40s. Breezy west winds 5 to 25 miles per hour. And Friday, sunny with highs 52 to 55 degrees. West wind 5 miles per hour.
We are reporting that, yes, the sun is coming out. It is a new day, and we're continuing to keep you updated on local elections. Thanks for your text so far. People who appreciate getting this information about where they live, check it out at kaxe.org.
Mm-hmm. Bellwether Research and Consulting. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. We know the big top lines of this election, including Donald Trump's return to the White House, but counting continues in several states. Important to note that. But to talk about that and just how Election Day voting went in general, we're joined this morning by NPR voting correspondent Miles Parks, who's here with us in studio. Good morning.
Hey, Michelle.
Okay. The big takeaway here, voting seemed to have gone smoothly, right, across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. And according to the University of Florida's turnout lab, it seems like a really high turnout election, one of the highest in recent history, second only to 2020. Here's how Republican Secretary of State of Georgia Brad Raffensperger put it to NPR.
We had record turnout. We're over 5 million, 5,222,397 votes were cast today. On the early voting period we had, and also absentees accepted so far.
Okay, and what about the counting of all those votes?
It's also gone really smoothly. There were some isolated incidents, most notably a tabulator issue in Milwaukee that set that count back a little bit. They had to rescan about 30,000 ballots, but those sort of things happen every single election. What we haven't seen this year is the sort of interference we saw in 2020 with large groups of people gathering, trying to interfere with the count, and that probably has a lot to do with the fact of who's winning, right? Donald Trump was pushing for people to gather in 2020 when it looked like things were not going to go his way. Obviously, we are dealing with a very different set of election results this time around, and those concerns from Trump and his allies seem to have kind of dissipated.
Now, there were a series of bomb threats at polling places across the country. It does not seem to have caused major disruptions, but what do we know about them?
So U.S. intelligence officials said they appeared to come from Russian email domains, but we don't exactly know who sent them or exactly what they said. They were sent to a number of politically important locations in Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, a number of other states. It's a little bit unclear at this point exactly how many there were. It seems like dozens, potentially up to 100. And generally, as you mentioned, they didn't seem to affect voting too much. There were a few evacuations in some polling places in Georgia, for instance, did stay open for an extra hour or so as a result. So on the one hand, this is a very disturbing development to ever happen on an election day. But on the other hand, what I heard from election security experts is that this showed, the response from election officials showed that this was something they were preparing for ahead of this election.
And Miles, you know, the race calls came much faster this year than in 2020. And in fact, I just have to be honest, a lot faster than many of us expected. Mm-hmm. A lot of us had kind of settled in for the long haul, right? We had our special snacks and all of that.
Yeah.
So what changed?
So margins are the most important thing when it comes to how quickly outlets can make race calls. And this is starting to look like a fairly decisive victory. But there were also new rules in a number of states that did speed up counting, as well as a big factor is that there were just less mail ballots cast across the country than there were in 2020. We know mail ballots take a little longer to count than in-person voting. I will say, though, the western part of the United States is where most of those mail ballots are concentrated. And so you can see we are still waiting for results, a lot of results in California, Nevada, Arizona. And that's a big reason why it's still unclear who is going to end up controlling the U.S. House of Representatives.
That is NPR's Miles Parks. Miles, thank you.
Thank you.
We will spend a lot of time in days to come asking questions that begin, what does the election mean for issue after issue after issue after person after place? And right now we ask what the election means for Israel. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf has been following the election from Tel Aviv. Welcome.
Hi.
So what reactions are you seeing where you are?
Well, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu put out a statement congratulating Trump, calling his win, quote, history's greatest comeback. He went on to say that Trump's return to the White House is a, quote, powerful recommitment to the great alliance between Israel and America. And that's how many members of Israel's government are reacting today, especially the most far-right members of Netanyahu's party. You know, more broadly, a recent survey of Israelis found that two-thirds preferred Trump over Harris. Hmm. Many Israelis we've talked to think that Trump will be loyal to Israel and its interests.
Of course, we will remember that Trump did a variety of things, for example, moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem when he was president last time. Yep. Now, what is the reaction from Palestinians?
Well, there hasn't been much official comment from Palestinian leaders yet. Bassem Naim, a senior Hamas official, put out a statement this morning calling for an end to the war in Gaza and an end to, quote, blind U.S. support for Israel. You know, many Palestinians we've spoken to have said that they didn't think either candidate was going to make their lives better. But many we've talked to are worried that a Trump presidency could embolden Netanyahu and his government. Here's Mumin Abu Kafi Abu Watan. He's a resident of Ramallah in the Israeli-occupied West Bank this morning. Trump's victory is catastrophic for the Palestinian people, he says, especially for the people of Gaza. He also talked about his fears that Trump will allow Netanyahu and his government to annex the West Bank, which would allow Israel to permanently control land that Palestinians want for their future state.
Okay, we will find out what the new administration has for its policy toward Israel and toward Palestinians. But I want to ask about a rather large piece of news. This would have been the lead story in the world had it not happened on the American election day, I think. Yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu announced he was firing his defense minister, Yoav Gallant. Why was that important and what are the implications?
Yeah, so this is something we were kind of expecting. It's been bubbling around here, but it was a surprise for Netanyahu to do it last night. You know, Gallant has been the defense minister for this current war in Gaza this entire time, so this is a really big shakeup. Gallant and Netanyahu have been increasingly at odds, especially on how to proceed with the war in Gaza. This isn't the first time that Netanyahu has dismissed Gallant. He did it previously in early 2023, before the Hamas-led attack on Israel that sparked this current war in Gaza. And when he did it that time, it led to widespread protests across Israel, and Gallant was reinstated. You know, and last night after the announcement, there were protests again all throughout, you know, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and beyond, and they're expected to continue this week. This was huge here in Israel. You know, this move gives Netanyahu more freedom to do what he wants in Gaza, you know, especially with a Trump presidency on the horizon.
Granting that it's hard to forecast, what does a Trump presidency mean for the war that Israel is fighting against Hamas?
Well, Trump has said that he wants a ceasefire in Gaza, but analysts in Israel believe Trump will help Netanyahu end that war on terms that are favorable to Israel. Many think that's one of the reasons that Netanyahu has been noncommittal on a ceasefire in Gaza up until now. He's been waiting for this very thing to happen, for Trump to win the election and allow him more freedom.
Kat, thanks so much for the update. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Steve.
NPR's Kat Lonsdorf is in Tel Aviv. This is NPR News.
National Public Radio's Morning Edition. It's here on member-supported KAXE. It is 8:42. I'm Heidi Holton with Andrew Duzingle and Chelsea Perkins. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Patrick Coulican from the Minnesota Reformer, bringing you local and statewide election coverage.
We receive support from Fixcon Roofing, professionally trained roofers committed to using local building suppliers for your custom roofing needs in northern Minnesota. More information at fikscon.com.
Here's a fun question. We're getting we have shorter days. I think it felt like night at 3 p.m. yesterday. We want to know, what's your favorite indoor hobby, stuff you might be doing as the seasons change? For you, Andrew, you're doubling down on canasta here.
Yeah, not successfully, though. I can't believe I lost. So get a little deep dive. I played against my parents this weekend and I had, like, I was about to win. All I needed to do was just rummy in the last hand,
right,
and I could not open for the life of me. And it was very frustrating.
You could not. Do you call it meld? We call it meld.
Call it meld.
Oh, maybe we're playing different games. Are we playing different games?
What do you mean meld?
Meld means go down. That's the.
Oh, you don't call it rummy?
No.
Oh.
Wow, we need to battle this out. Contention abounds when it comes to canasta.
Yeah, what are the official rules? Text us on the text line.
218-326-1234. Maybe there's something you want to learn this winter. Maybe you want Andrew to teach you his weird version of canasta. Perhaps that's the case. No.
You're the one who plays with wilds could be a canasta, which...
Yes.
That's... That's so many points.
I know, but we've taken that off the table. So, yeah, what? Canasta of wild cards is not really fair. So, there you go. If you know, you know. How's that?
I do not know, actually. Yeah. I know nothing about this game.
I used to play it with my grandma. It was a very sweet thing as I met my husband and introduced him to my grandmother. She said, she just looked at me very sternly, and she was not a stern woman. And she just said, we're teaching him canasta. And I was like, what? She's like, you need a game. As a couple, you need a game, a lifelong game. And I was like, okay. And she was right. We're still playing canasta. So I get to think of my grandmother every time we do that.
Oh, that's very sweet.
But I also, to be fair, very sweet she was, but she also trash talked. So that comes out of me out of
my
nowhere.
My grandma does too in canasta.
I know. So it's like, it's a weird thing. It's like I'm channeling her while we're playing the game. So... How about some more election stuff coming up? We're going to hear a little bit of music, and then we'll be talking with the Minnesota Reformer. Remind folks to check out KAXE.org. You guys are continuing to build this information about what happened during the elections, right?
Yeah, and if you haven't had a chance, check out our live blog. There's lots of great, you know, stories on there about what we saw out in the field. Great imagery as well from our photographer, Lori Scholl.
And that was the Hard Quartet, sort of a super group of Stephen Malkmus from Pavement, Jim White, Emmett Kelly, and Matt Sweeney. That song was called Our Hometown Boy. Programming on KXE is supported in part by Pickett Agency, an official Minsure partner. It's open enrollment season, and Pickett Agency is here to support the Bemidji community with health plan enrollment and guidance. More information is available by calling 218-751-1213 or by visiting picketagency.com.
It is 8:48 and you are tuned into the Wednesday morning show. It's member supported KAXE. We're continuing coverage of elections in the state of Minnesota, local races throughout our region. Check it out at KAXE.org. Chelsea Perkins joins us as well as by phone. We're talking now to J. Patrick Koulikan. He's the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. He was the Capitol reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and he joins us now. Patrick, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
So, Patrick, I wanted to start off just by asking, you know, your impressions of how the congressional races shook out last night in the state.
So it's a status quo election. All the incumbents won, and quite handily. And I think what we're seeing is races or districts that were once close and competitive fairly recently, like the 8th in Northeast Minnesota and the 1st in Southern Minnesota, now solidly in Republican hands. And you can say the same about the 3rd in the Western suburbs down here in the Metro, now solidly Democratic. And I think the surprise of the night for me was Representative Angie Craig, the Democratic senator in the second, which is in the kind of southeast metro, winning pretty handily. She's won a series of very close elections since her first in 2018 after losing in 2016. But she won handily. She seems to have really figured out that district. She works very hard. But also, I think you're probably also seeing, again, where a once competitive district might be solidly in one party's hands.
It did seem like leading up to that race that people were thinking that they would be much closer for Craig.
Yeah, I mean, she's always just gotten by in close races. But I think all that work she's put in, she's famous for her constituent service. She really made a lot of overtures to more conservative voters with her discussions of the border crisis. She voted against her party on that. She's been a strong supporter of law enforcement. And I think there's that really appealed to a lot of more centrist voters in that district. And then also her opponent, Joe Tarab, he's got a great resume. He was a county and then a federal prosecutor. He's the son of a Sudanese immigrant. But when you're running for the first time for Congress, he's never run for office before. You really have no name recognition at all. Nobody knows who he is. And you would need really millions and millions of dollars to help people understand your biography. And that's just not, he didn't have that. And in the meantime, Craig used some really slash and burn attacks on him. In some cases, they were pretty dishonest about his abortion record and also about his record as a prosecutor, calling him really soft on crime. Quite the attack, but obviously it was effective. She won by more than 10 points, I think, as of unofficial results.
Was there a lot of money in her campaign?
Yeah, I mean, she's become a solid fundraiser, and the DCCC, the National Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, has supported her for several cycles in a row. But as it turns out, I don't even know that she needed to spend as much as she did.
Yeah, you can read more of this story at Minnesota Reformer. It's U.S. Representative Angie Craig wins in a landslide. That's at minnesotareformer.com.
So what were you looking out for in the legislative races, Patrick?
So we had isolated about 15 seats. There was a handful in greater Minnesota. There was this one Iron Range seat that was in Democratic hands. Remaining, and then a few here and there outstate, and then a number in the metro. And it looks like the Republicans have flipped three at this point, although there's going to be some, there could be some recounts because some of these races are extremely tight. And at the moment, we're at 67-67. Some genius back in the state's founding decided we should have an even number of legislators. And so occasionally this happens. I believe the last time was 1979. And so it's going to be a really interesting legislative session if it does indeed bear out that it's going to be 67-67.
And what do you predict if that were to be the case?
Well, in an era of political polarization and what political scientists call negative polarization, where what really motivates you in politics is fear and loathing of the opposition, it really creates a pretty thorny problem because negotiation and divided government has been so difficult, both at the national and at the state level. It also maybe creates an opportunity for some creativity and some problem solving and more adult behavior than unfortunately we often see in politics, especially in this era.
So I'm curious about, you know, how you're feeling about how Minnesota went in the presidential race as well. It seemed like it was pretty close there for a while, closer than maybe a lot of predicted.
Yeah, the last I saw it was, I think it was 3.5, but I'm not exactly, don't quote me on that, because I went to bed at 1 a.m. and was getting my boys out the door this morning. But I think we had an inkling that if the race were decided by less than 4 points, it would give Republicans a shot to take back the Minnesota State House. And so I think that the final number, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be around there. I think it just is a reflection of the national trend where everything went right last night, meaning Donald Trump really moved the country to the right with his candidacy. And so I'm not terribly surprised that we moved in that direction as well. I'm sure it's a huge disappointment for Governor Tim Walz. You would think that the fact that he was on the ticket would have led to a better result for Harris Walz here. But again, we're in this era of negative polarization, and people, even though Tim Walz is our governor, there's a lot of people who just don't like him. And the fact that he's from here is not a reason for them to vote for Harris.
That is J. Patrick Koulikan from the Minnesota Reformer. You can find their election coverage at minnesotareformer.com. Thanks so much for your time today.
Good to be here.
Coming up in our next hour, we're going to be honing in on the Brainerd area with Teresa Bork from the Brainerd Dispatch, correct?
Yeah, Teresa was probably up late as well, if I know anything about the Brainerd Dispatch newsroom, following those results up in the Brainerd Lakes area.
Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm all right, I'm all right. I'm just weary to my bones. Still, you don't expect to be bright and bon vivant so far away from home. Oh, so far away.
It's all right. We've lived so well so long. Still, when I think of this road we've traveled on, I wonder what's gone wrong. Can't help but wonder what's gone wrong. I was dying. I dreamed that my soul rose unexpectedly, and looking back down on me, smiled reassuringly. And I dreamed I was flying and high up above.